talk later, or you can read up while I discuss everyone else's. When I designed this platform, I really looked at, you know, this very specific use case for secure enclaves, and that is network services. And you'll see why this is, I guess, an interesting use case further on in my presentation. So a couple goals to, like, in my design, right, using SGX, using, being secure, being easy to use. And this last one's also very important because, I don't know, tried using some of the other, the Into SGX SDK or something like that. But getting something running takes some time. So I'm going to go through each of these things and show you how I dealt with it, and hopefully at the end I can show you some demos.
Sorry about that. Okay. So let's start with designing for security. Right. One of the interesting things when you look at, you know, security is, you know, which programming language can you use? This is a picture from Microsoft, actually, where they showed, of all the bugs that they have in their software over the past, 12 years, which of those are caused by memory safety issues, and which were other types of bugs. So about 70% of all their security issues were memory safety issues, right? So, if you are really focused on something and working on your own, and you can probably write memory safe C, but doing it at a scale of a large company is, or just any large project, it's just basically impossible. So that's why I think Rust is the best way to go for secure enclaves, right? You have this kind of minimal environment, so you probably can't pull in all the dependencies that you would need for a JVM or something like that. So you're kind of stuck with choosing something like lower level. Of course, this is you've identified something you want to be super secure. So why use C, right? So we're using Rust. So some of the cool features of Rust are guaranteed memory and type safety. There's static analysis built right into the compiler, right? 25 years of programming languages and static analysis research that is just right available right there. Very good way to deal with errors, right? So you cannot ignore errors in Rust, but it's not hard to deal with them either. So that's really good. Very good concurrency primitives, and like I said, basically no runtime, right? You can just compile it down to the bare metal, which is what we need to do in this environment. Okay, so the next thing that we're thinking about, when you're designing something for security purposes, is the interface that you expose to the outside world, right? The interface is the number one attack point for an adversary. So you better think long and hard about what are you going to expose there, and how are you going to deal with whatever an attacker might throw at you, right? So if you use an interface binary function call interface you might find in just any the C calling convention or even the Linux syscall calling convention, it's very hard to get these things correct. You can have variable length structures. You can have time of check to time of use issues. You can have padding issues, and things like that. Right. So, regarding the padding issue, this was an issue with the Intel SGX SDK. So this is now an excerpt from the developer guide from Intel, where they say, okay, you've got to be aware. You don't put padding in the structures that you're using in your enclave interface. Another thing from Intel's manual or Intel's developer guide, right? They had this functionality to allow you to specify like variable length inputs, well, that's gone now, right? So why are we trying to mimic these C type interfaces across an interface that's just not compatible not suitable for it? I would say, look somewhere else, right? If you look at network services, they are designed to work with untrusted inputs, right? Like everyone has some web servers and they're connected to the internet, and right, they have been for 30 years and they're like really focused on dealing with untrusted inputs. So why not do the same, right? So in the EDP, we just provide a byte stream abstraction. And then you can run any protocol you want on top of that, including like TLS or not, right? But you can run gRPC or HTTP or anything like that. And you know, you might think that a reason for not running like a full protocol like that is that parsing is hard. And, you know, we're an enclave, we don't want to deal with like parsing issues. But you know, if you're using anything but C, parsing is actually easy, right? So that's not a reason not to use it. Okay. Moving on to the threat model. You know, if you're talking about network services, this is what you can think of, right? You can basically get your remote compute infrastructure from anywhere. It doesn't matter as long as they have this secure enclave capability. It runs on the server. You don't trust the administrator. You don't trust the server, right? So this is like a cloud provider or anything. You trust, of course, the client and the user. For secure enclaves specifically, kind of, you know, we're not considering availability here. But you can, of course, get availability by deploying your things in a redundant fashion across multiple providers or something like that. So the secure enclave is the network server. That is what you would, how you need to think about this here, right? So you're not talking to like a host that is running some server, but you're talking to directly to the secure enclave, right? So how does that integrate with remote attestation? Well, easy, right? Client connects to the secure enclave. There's some protocol that you do where you verify, you know, is this a real software that I'm trying to run? Is running on a legit platform, something like that. And then you can move on. So in a very first idea of like how you would implement this, maybe you can like save the hash of your that you expect on the server side in your client program, and you verify that when you do this connection. This works, right? But now you really have an issue because you can't do updates on the server side, and you need like one client per service, like because the identity of the server is baked into the client. You need a different client all the time, right? So we have this ability to verify the code identity on the server side, but how do we know which identity we want here? That's a big question. But this is something that you can solve in a different way, right? So like I said, it's a byte stream abstraction, so we can just use TLS. So if we take a TLS private key and assign it to the enclave, and then make sure that the enclave never exposes this private key to the world, right? Then if you are able to establish a secure channel and the enclave identifies itself using its private key, you know you're talking directly to the enclave, right? Because the secure enclave is the only one that has access to this key. So you don't actually need to do a live remote attestation challenge if you use this scheme. You can just, you know, attest to the public enclave. The enclave can have its public key attested to once, and then you can rely on that going forward. And then you can just set up a standard TLS connection, right? So this makes the whole life a whole lot easier because now you can use, you don't have to write your own custom protocols to do security and things like that. So similarly to like how a standard TLS certificate kind of binds a subject name to a TLS public key, you can use an attestation to bind the public key to a software. So now we have a binding all the way from subject name to the enclave. Right? So you can use this in your trust model. So when you say, I'm going to a particular web service like mywebmail.com, okay, I know that, you know, mywebmail.com is actually running a particular piece of software. Right, hop through the certificate and then through the attestation, you know exactly the server-side software that's running on mywebmail.com. So you can't do something like the LavaBit thing, right, where the private key is leaked or ordered to be leaked, because the private key is not owned by a human, it's owned by the enclave. And you know that the software that you've written that's running in the enclave, it cannot, like, it will not release the private key, right? So when the enclave starts, you just check, you know, do I have a valid private key? If not, I'll make one. And then do I have a valid certificate? If not, you know, I'll put a certificate signing request. And then I just, you know, once I get the certificate, I can run, I can be a TLS server. Okay, so that's the services part, like, and how you integrate services with enclaves. So then, talking about, you know, portability and ease of use. If you want to run an Intel SGX enclave, all you need to do is write a simple Rust program, and I'll show you that in a bit. And that's because the Rust standard library upstream includes a backend for SGX that we wrote. So you can just, Rust has very good support for cross-compilation. So you can easily just, you know, install the standard library for this other target, compile for this SGX target, and now your program is just running or is able to run in an enclave. Right? So a lot of people or a lot of designs for using enclaves, they make you think about splitting your application in halves. Like one half runs outside the enclave, one half runs inside. But you know, then you need to write two pieces of software, so that's a lot of work. So because of the simple byte stream interface that you know I defined as the enclave interface, we only ever need to write the piece that runs outside the enclave once, and you can reuse that for all enclaves. Right. So this is just available. You can just install that once, and you can run all the enclaves. This runner program is just in charge of shuttling traffic around between the outside world and the enclave, right? Because it's just forwarding a byte stream, right? So if you have a TCP listening server or something like that, right, that needs to run outside the enclave. It interacts with the OS to do that. When you get any connection, that gets passed through the enclave, and the read and write operations are just passed directly through. So it also means that, you know, this enclave is kind of like independent of like the operating system, right? Because it doesn't depend on anything. So you can use the same enclave on all OSs easily. Cool. So there was a bit of a whirlwind of the overview of, like, you know, the thoughts that I put into like designing the system. You take SGX, you take Rust, you take a service, network service idea, you combine it, and that's what the enclave development platform is. Website is edp.fortanix.com. You can download everything there. And there's like a quick start guide and everything. So in the future, we're going to work on supporting SGX2 and other extensions that are upcoming. We're going to do better support for asynchronous I/O. So Rust has very good support for asynchronous I/O using futures. So that's going to be supported soon. And I'm looking at like adding some binary analysis tools so that, you know, once you've built the enclave, you want to like make sure that certain things got compiled correctly to guard against miscompilations and programmer errors. Again, to add like another layer of security on top of this interface for the enclave. Okay, so let's move to a quick demo. here, one of the tools that is available is just, you know, checking if your system is configured correctly to run SGX, right? So it's this SGX detect tool, and it will just check everything. Do I have it enabled in the BIOS? Do I have the right system software installed? Do I have the driver? All that stuff. Then here, it looks like we're not running a piece that's needed on older systems. So, you know, Intel, I'll get to that in a bit. So we'll just start the software that's not running. And then if you run it again, you can see, okay, you know, I was able to launch Enclaves. Good, you're good to go. So why do you need this AESM service? Well, on Intel processors before, like, late 2018, there was actually, like, DRM built into SGX, so you couldn't run your own software. But that's all gone now. If you buy a new enough processor, you can run whatever Enclaves you want without Intel's whitelist. Okay, so let's run some actual Enclave code, right? So I'll just do a simple Hello World demo here first, right? So I'll just, you know, write a standard Rust Hello World. It, you know, it's just the standard thing you get when you first start a Rust project. Main function, print hello, okay, run it. So I just ran it for Linux, cargo run, because I was running this on Linux, right? So, but now I'll just run it on SGX. So all I need to do is specify that I'm cross-compiling to a different target, the Portanix on SGX target, run it, boom. Okay, so the command to print hello world to the screen here, that actually came from inside the Enclave.
Is the time incredible?
I'm sorry?
Is the time incredible here?
Is the timing...
Did it really take a split second to
warm up? Yeah. So in this is really fast. In the next video, I have sped up the compilation a bit, but this is actually how fast it really is. Okay. So this is just a Hello World program. I told you I wanted to write network services. So let's do that, right? I'm gonna use the Hyper library, which is a standard way. Sorry. Nope, I'm not using the Rocket library, which is a way to write web applications in Rust. And then while I'm editing this file to add the Rocket dependency to my project, I'm also going to configure that I want a certain number of threads. So in version 1 of SGX, there's a maximum number of threads that you have to specify at build time. In order to use Rocket, you need to enable some features in Rust. I'm gonna import the Rocket crate. The crate is basically what is a library in other languages. So I'm just defining the slash hello endpoint for my API, right? Because we're doing hello world here. So instead of printing it to the screen, I'm just going to return hello world, you know, as the output of my API here. And then in my main function, I'm just going to run the web server with this one endpoint here.
You don't need a macro use anymore.
Yeah, no. Depends on what you do, right? So the question was, you don't need to use macro use anymore. Macro use, you need it if you don't explicitly import the macro you're using a use statement. So macro use is like a blanket import of all macros from a Rust crate. It's compiled it. And like I said, this was a little bit sped up, but you know, you can see it's running on port 8000. That's it, right? We just built a web server, a web application that's completely contained.